Hi, this is Paul Warne, and you're listening to the Rams Review Podcast.
This is the Rams Review Podcast. Discussions, insights, interviews, and analysis. All passion, all Derby County.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Rams Review Podcast with Jason as your host. And it's the turn of the two Chris's this week as our guests. Chris Holt, evening, mate. How are we doing?
Good evening, Jason. Very well, thank you.
Good. And back again, Chris Smith. Chris, evening, mate.
Hi, Jace. How you doing? Thanks for inviting me on.
No, more than welcome, mate. And I'm doing all right after Saturday and the first, I know we're only first week in February, but Derby's first back-to-back victories of the new calendar year. We'll move on to that in a little bit more detail in a minute, but I want to start with, obviously, the end of the transfer window, because we haven't done a podcast since then, and I want to get your opinions on sort of the transfer window as for Derby County. Chris Smith, I'll come to you first. I mean, we were all sort of wondering if that striker was going to go over the line. Obviously, Facebook went mad, X went mad when nothing really happened. And then, you know, you listen to the interview with Warne the next day, always handy to have, obviously, a pre-match presser just after the international break. And I wouldn't say everybody, but I think a lot of people's opinions on social media were kind of changed by that interview. It did seem like, you know, Derby tried. I know Dom said on Radio Derby that just because a few names were bandied about don't mean that they were the ones that Derby were actually interested in, and that might have just been a bit of, you know, bit of media talk. Obviously, we assume the lad that went down to Portsmouth was somebody that Derby were interested in and obviously chose them over us. Whilst it is possibly a detriment to not bring a striker in, and obviously the future will sort of dictate that, I was quite encouraged by the words that Warne said. It wasn't like other transfer windows, obviously, over the last couple of years where we've tried to bring in strikers and some of the names that have been bandied about, and ultimately it's just been a damp squib. I think this time, actually, Derby went around their business, and we'll talk about, obviously, the couple that come in and, obviously, the sort of departure of Max Bird. I think from what we can read into it, there was a couple of targets. They went to different clubs or stayed put. And to be honest with you, the market was a little bit stale, really, for a striking option.
Yeah, I think I tweeted out the other day, I think if their ability to sign a striker was as good as the PR to excuse the fact they didn't, then I think, you know, as I say, we'd be sitting here now with Mbappe up front. I think I don't think the transfer window was catastrophic. So I think it's important to say that. I think that, you know, kind of, we'll talk about Max in a minute. I think the Max Bird, you know, you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. I think with that sort of situation when he's that close to the end of his contract, and he clearly told the club that he didn't want to sign a new one. I just don't see a valid excuse for not signing a striker. I understand the whole conversation and rhetoric about the transfer window being a domino effect, and the Premier League are all on lockdown because they're all petrified of FFP, and that kind of filters down to the Champ because they can't get Prem people on loan, and then the Champ can't get Prem people on loan, so we can't get Champ people on loan or on a short term deal, or anybody gets released, who maybe, you know, might hold on to somebody till the summer who they might have let go. So I don't think the window was catastrophic, but I was absolutely wounded on Thursday night. You know what I mean? So, you know, I was absolutely raging. And, you know, we sort of, I just couldn't believe it, really, after all this time. I thought something's got to give. Now, again, I suppose, back in the day, we would have probably just gone to Sheffield Wednesday and dropped our trousers for Smith or Gregory, and we didn't do that. So, okay, maybe you can turn around and say, well, that's a step in the right direction. I heard the same sort of things that you heard, that the names that we were after maybe weren't the ones that we were all reading about. Great. But you don't get past the fact that we didn't get one. Now, we might get away with it. We might sign Dwight Gayle. Washington might come back. But already, you've seen Mendes get clouted on Saturday. So is he out for, a couple of training sessions, a couple of weeks, a couple of months? Don't know. But kind of I as I say, I was disappointed, I think, is probably my summary. I don't I kind of I do understand the kind of the things that were put forward by Warne, but I don't think I'm buying it. I think if you've got a professional recruitment team and a club the size of stature of Derby, and the fact that we just so desperately needed a striker, and the fact that Warne had held his hands up and said last year he got too obsessed with getting, the right person wrong, when he probably should have considered he just needed a body. Well, if we're not in that point now, I don't know when we ever will be. And as I say, I don't want to be neg, because I want to sort of try now. We'll talk about this later on, but. I think it was a fail, mate, and I just hope that, I'm not looking Blackett Taylor or Ebu Adams, and I think they look good signings. And again, I guess you'll ask me about that in a sec, but that striker thing was a fail, and I just hope it doesn't come back and bite us.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, and I must admit I was a little bit. Obviously, Abu Adams was announced, and you thought, well, maybe they are saving this sort of not stellar striker signing, but Derby are going to announce something Friday afternoon, and then when the club tweeted out the picture of Connor Washington back in training, there's something inside me that just went, I don't think we are bringing a striker in now. I really don't. And then, obviously, as I say, I would. I don't really know what to kind of say about the Paul Warne interview in terms of is it how truthful it is. Obviously, he's probably not going to come out and go, yeah, I tried to sign seven and none of them had come. I don't. He's obviously not going to bring that out into the media. But, and I think I said on the last podcast at this point, sort of bringing in just somebody who can play up front would have sufficed just in case. And then, like you say, the injury of the potential injury doubt of Mendes Lang, you just never really know at the moment. But I do side with you as well. 2, 3 years ago, we probably would have just brought somebody in, thrown money at it, and for no reason. Dwight Gayle is for me, a name that he would do on a 6 month deal for me, I think. If that is true, or if he's turning his career attentions to paddle or whatever it is these days, which is a game I've played, by the way. I don't get the hype, but whatever. It's but I think, as I say, we will look at the other two that we did bring in, and we'll talk about him in a bit more detail later on, obviously, because of his performance on Saturday. But that bit of a midfield general in Abu Adams, I was quite impressed with him. I think already after the first 70 minutes, I think we've both said, Chris, if you're a betting man and you want somebody who's going to get booked, Louis Sibley is normally a man that you sort of go to in a derby shirt. I think Adams might just potentially pip him. I think but at the end of the day, if that's the way that he plays the game, he plays the game, and I think that's what Derby lacked. And then obviously Corey Blackett Taylor. I think he was fit for Saturday personally. And obviously Warne kind of said after he wasn't going to play him anyway. So there's a few contradicting messages coming out from the club, but put aside the slight disappointment of not bringing through a striker, as you say, it's not all doom and gloom in bringing two people in two positions that we needed. And I suppose really in Adams, it wasn't really the position we were expecting somebody to come in, were we? I mean, when obviously that was announced and then Max's name was linked, I thought, oh, well, there we go. There's a replacement. But then you've got Max back on loan till the end of the season again. So I think there's more positivity than negativity for me at this transfer window. What's your thoughts on the two that we did manage to bring in over the line?
Just quickly touching on what Chris said previously, I agree with him. I think just quickly, I think we were looking for an estate car, and Paul Warren sort of accepted that we're going to get a hatchback with the seats folded back. And I find it quite frustrating that Max Bird deal was being discussed over 6 weeks apparently, and Max was aware of it back in December. So, planning is key to this time of year, isn't it? Regarding the two that have come in, my only concern is it seems to be an overload. So we've now got yet another winger and we've got another midfielder. Now with Corey Smith coming in and the failure of Tyrese Fornar, let's be honest, Fornar has been it hasn't worked. I'm just all of a sudden looking at it as is it a defensive element to the team that's missing, which I think it is, which would be a positive regarding the signing. My only concern with Ebuwie is exactly what you said, Jason. He's very enthusiastic. He's only played 16 games at this level as in the championship level. Everything else has been League Two. So including the championship and League One, he's played 16 games. Now, that's not experience, is it, really? His enthusiasm was for all to see. My other concern is that what comes with enthusiasm is not a level head, someone who's a little bit overexcited to prove a point. We all saw how happy he was to be at the club. We all saw his capabilities on Saturday. I'm not sure we needed him, to be honest. I know people keep saying that we needed to fill a hole that potentially was there. We discussed it last week regarding the abyss of space in between the midfield and the forwards, but I think that was more of the formation than the actual structure of the side, if that makes sense, of the personnel. Does it mean that he's give up on Fauna? Does it mean that he's give up on Smith? Who knows? I just think it's an overload, and I'm just concerned now. We've got a lot of midfielders, and all of a sudden we're going to bring Corey Blackett-Taylor in, who has got a good season record so far this season. But where does he fit in it all? Because I actually thought that prior to him coming in, I didn't think we had a problem on the wings. There was other issues regarding the forward line, which was the centre forward. Going back to what Chris was saying, I think it was paramount as well. I think it was sometimes, I understand this priority to keep within the means of the club and sustainability and what have you. But sometimes you've got to take a little gamble. You have to. The Bird deal could have been done earlier in the window. All of a sudden, we're going to Man City at Sheffield Wednesday asking for a favour. Let's be honest, we screwed them over 2 years ago. Do you think they're going to turn around and go, yeah, because you can have Gregory, because you can have Smith, no problem at all. We'll drive them to you. It wasn't going to happen. So, look, if he can coach our way out of this horrible league with the personnel he's got, brilliant. Gale would be a good asset. I agree with you. It's something a bit different. But again, how fit is he? He hasn't been playing at Stoke for a while. He can't get into a team that's getting smashed every week. So that sort of tells you where his head's at.
Yeah, that kind of brings me back to that sort of comment that I made. Sort of, if that is the level of striker that is available to us, then the argument is, are they worth the outlay over having somebody in? But of course, that is hindsight, because if James Collins was to go down, and then, like you say, Mendes Lang's a bit of an unfit unknown at the moment. I mean, you've literally got nobody that can play up front. So yeah, it's interesting. We'll have to obviously see how that goes. But the other Chris, your thoughts on the two that we brought in? I mean, I pretty much echo what Altie's just said there. I wasn't necessarily expecting a midfielder, and did I think we really needed one? I'm not sure. I think we've played in we we've done well enough in enough games this year, sort of in that run of 10 out of 12, where, you know, that sort of space that we saw the other week was not evident. So, but I think in for me personally, I've been saying for the last 2.5 years, really, since Shinny left, we needed somebody who was to put a foot on the ball in the midfield, and we've just seen time and time again Horahan just doesn't do it. As Chris mentioned, Fauna was probably brought in to be that type of player. It hasn't really hit the ground running for him. Obviously, Corey's missed a hell of a lot of the season. Liam Thompson, obviously, we know he's the type of player that likes to rat around and put a foot in, but he's not that physical presence that obviously that Adams is going to be. And then obviously Corey Blackett-Taylor, we've mentioned he's obviously only had fleeting minutes so far, and not pulled up any trees, but that's no disrespect to him. I'm more pleased than it was last January with Springett and Harvey White, you know, but I think it's all going to depend, isn't it, on how the second half of this season goes. If Derby manage it, it'll you know, the bringing in a striker won't matter. As soon as Derby, if Derby start to falter, that could really, really get a little bit toxic in and amongst the fan base if things really start to take a turn. And could hurt Derby in the closing running, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think the I mean, I think I'm probably with you, Jace, a little bit more than I am with Chris on Adams. I think that we have, I agree, we have got a lot of central midfielders. There's no question about that. And I definitely do agree with Chris that the structure and the balance of the midfield has been wrong for weeks, you know, kind of. You know, I mean, the Reading game was, I mean, I actually went to the Reading game and that was brutal. You know, they were a poor side and they just ran all over us, and the gaps in that game were unbelievable. So I think I agree with you, though, that I think Adams is a little bit different in that he is that combative midfielder. So he is going to put a foot in. I think Liam's just an energy man. So he's all over the place and he does pull people about and create space for people. But he doesn't put his foot. He's not the guy who's, he's, you know, he's a little chap and he's not a physical player. Corey Smith's not a physical player. I agree. The Fauna thing is seems a bit odd. You know, I don't know what he's done or, you know, whether Warne's obviously made a call that he's, you know, he's not even been in the squad, has he, in recent weeks? So either he's done something, which I doubt, because he seems a decent chap, but he just Warne clearly doesn't rate him right here, right now. So I think having somebody in there who's going to put himself about, you know, and you know, get his foot in and be that physical presence, I don't see that as a bad thing, really. And I think the team was missing something like that. I think Blackett-Taylor, not seen enough of him, obviously, in a Derby shirt as yet, and but you know, his stats would suggest and that he's got something about him. Certainly, every Charlton fan I've heard talk about him was saying he was pretty much their best player. So again, if we're doing taking the warm mantra of people proven, well, you know, if you compare it to Harvey White and Tony Springett last year, who came out of nowhere, well, what you have got here, regardless of anything else, is two players who are established, who have got, you know, games on the clock, who should be able to hit the ground running. So and go in straight in the first team, you know, and make a difference. So I think, you know, as I said, you know, when you came to me at the start, you know, I'm not disappointed by those two at all. I'm quite encouraged. I'm actually looking forward to seeing Blackett-Taylor, you know, do his thing and you know, gives us a bit of flexibility in formation and what have you. And but yeah, so I just hope that this striker thing doesn't come back and bite us on the backside.
Yeah, I think that sort of last put one of the last points you've just made there, there is a little bit more of a flexibility with some of the players that we've brought in. Obviously, we've seen that Warne likes to change it about a bit. Obviously, we've sort of been forced into the 3-5-2 with Niambe being missing and obviously Fozzie's being injured, and it's didn't necessarily work as well against Reading, obviously, as it did on Saturday. I thought the formation actually suited a little bit on Saturday, but you would have to say Joe Ward, I thought, played quite well at wing back, in all honesty. But you know, Ryan Niambe is pretty much a nailed on starter, isn't he? I think that apart from obviously Mendes, Lang, really, and Collins, so how's Niambe going to come into this side now in a three, or will it revert back to a four? But there's options there, which I like. And as yeah, I think a bit of beef in midfield's never a bad thing. And an option out, you know, another option out wide, certainly down the left side. I think it, I wouldn't say it was the weak area, but it was an area that I sort of looked at and thought that'd be nice. And then obviously we've said the striker would have been, I suppose, the icing on the cake, really. But we'll just have to wait and see. As we've mentioned, Dwight Gale is a name that has been bandied about. I'm sure there's one or two other, you know, free agents. But of course, as we've said, that then leads itself to fitness concerns and all that kind of thing. And let's face it, lads, we're what, 16 games left? I mean, they'll soon come round with Tuesday, Saturday, and over the Easter period. Before we know it, we'll be into single figures. And yeah, we might not have a free transfer sort of ready until that period, which might end up being the crunch period. And again, that might help us, but we shall wait and see. Words on, obviously, the big departure. Ulti, for me, I think you kind of nailed it earlier. I mean, and We've obviously got something for him. We don't know what that fee is. We would assume it's more than we would have ever got out of a tribunal. You can't say that Max hasn't dedicated himself to Derby over the last couple of years when he could have easily have walked. I think criticism's probably a strong word, but people talking about some of his performances this season and he hasn't really been at his best, I would agree with. I don't necessarily think that he has. But I think everything that you know about, that we know can come from Max, came on Saturday. And that is because he was given that little bit more of a license. I think it's fair to say, as Warren said, that might now, because his future's now settled, he knows what's going, that he can concentrate on his football. And for me, if he was going to go in the summer anyway, which sounds like he wasn't going to sign a contract, I'd rather have a focused Max Bird for the next 6 months, which could help propel Derby to where we want to be. We've got a little bit of money in the bank. Okay, we'd have loved to have used it in January on a striker. Hopefully that doesn't come back to bite us on the backside, but it's money in the coffers, and hopefully the planning behind the scenes is drawing those two separate lists up for the summer, dependent on what league we're in.
Yeah, I think the Max Bird money will be decent, to be fair. Paul Warren did say that he felt that they got the value that they were asking for. And, you know, we have to take his word for that. I also think that Chris is right in this element that Adams did bring a bit, something different to the team, allowing Hourihan and Bird to play their natural games. I still think Hourihan is a final two-third zone player and not a front third player, in the sense that he can't receive the ball in front of the back four. Hourihan just cannot do any damage there. I think you saw a more relaxed pair with Smith and Hourihan on Saturday. And in a way, a tad more, like Chris, are free. They seem to have no restrictions and element to play. I think Max has actually caught me by surprise. I thought his head maybe turned slightly and I thought it was a gamble to play him Saturday. I was proven wrong, and I'm glad to put my hand up and say I was proven wrong. I thought he showed extreme professionalism and dedication to the club, which is something that I think everybody appreciated. When you see the guy 48 hours earlier saying he can't wait to get started with Bristol City and run on to Ashton Gate, then obviously you always question where his head's at. But I think this deal must have been done a few weeks now. And I think he knew where he was going. I think Warren knew where he was going. I think one thing I will say about Max is I just hope he doesn't regret going too early, because I think his heart would have always wanted to play with Derby in the Championship and perhaps take it to the next stage. I wish him well at the end of the season, and hopefully he'll have an illustrious career. Will he take us to the promised land of the Championship with the performances? Like I said, Jason, who knows? He's been inconsistent. I don't think that's his form. I think that's a numerous things that have been in his situation. One being the formation doesn't suit him. I think two, the style of football doesn't suit him. And I just think that he has been in that state of limbo now, probably for 18 months. But look, he proved us all wrong Saturday, showed his passion, and Long may it continue.
Yeah, I must admit, after we'd scored and he was in front of the south stand thumping the Derby badge, I did think to myself a little bit, that feels a bit close to the bone. But I mean, as he let's face it, he should have scored. Really, that dribbling run that he had, and we'll move on to that game in a little bit more. But I think it was a if that's the Max Bird, as I say, if that's the Max Bird we're going to get for the final 16 games, then I think we've may well be a key part in all this. Chris Smith, your opinions on Max? I say I don't think there's too many Derby players that are. Derby fans that are, have got negative feelings about him leaving, and obviously him coming back on loan. I think, as Chris just said there, it was always a little bit where was his head going to be. But if he be interesting to see whose decision, we'll probably never know whose decision it was. Did he want to stay for that last 6 months? Did Derby demand that he stayed, or did Bristol go, look, if you want him for 6 months? For the final 6 months, then you can have him, and maybe at a slightly reduced fee. But whoever's decision that was, fingers crossed, it's going to be the right one.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I was so pleased that he played well on Saturday because I feared for him. I mean, I've got all the time in the world for Max. He's one of my favourite players for Derby. I think he is one of our best players. I totally agree with Chris. I think the, he's had, the style of football doesn't suit him at all. Formations all over the place. We know, we've said week after week, the midfield structure's imbalanced, which obviously doesn't suit him because then you're asking him to do things that he doesn't want to do. I think, I take the point. Has he gone early? But I think I actually heard Warren say that it wasn't to do with money. I mean, maybe he would say that, but Warren said it was nothing to do with money, and he was never going to sign that contract. And, obviously, what he also isn't going to say is perhaps Max fancied playing for Liam Manning more than he fancied playing for Warren, but yeah, super pleased for him. I mean, it's really hard. I mean, it's easy to forget, by the way, Aaron Cashin was terrible for the first 6 weeks of this season. The first sort of 6 weeks, 2 months, I remember those early games, he was brutal. And once he'd sort of got over that Brighton move falling through and everything settled down, he's been an absolute superstar. I think, pretty much player of the year. So I think it's easy for us from the outside to underestimate the impact these transfer sort of sagas, as it were, and all of that kind of, where am I going to work next year? If you were sitting there now thinking, well, am I going to be working in Derby this time next year and living in this house, or am I going to be working in Bristol or flipping, kind of Plymouth or Leeds or whatever? You just don't know. If especially when you're kind of 22 years old, 23 years old or whatever, it's hard work, isn't it? So I've got all the time in the world for Max. I was really pleased because I did fear for him Saturday. I think if Saturday had gone wrong, I think he would have very quickly become a scapegoat in that. And so super pleased that that worked out all right. I'm glad, he turned up. I never doubted he put the effort in. As I say, I was just concerned that he would very quickly become the scapegoat. So yeah, really good. And yeah, let's hope he keeps that up to the end of the season.
Fingers crossed. And before we move on to the final point of transfer business, I'm just watching the Cambridge Bolton game. The match has just been delayed after 10 minutes. It is absolutely lashing it down in Cambridge. And I think they're pulling it off for a waterlogged pitch by the looks of it. So another game potentially. It's just saying match delayed at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see if that's another one that Bolton have got to squeeze in. That might benefit Derby. But as the final mention of the transfer window, Alti, was, and they saved it until obviously after the deadline was done. But Aaron Cashin signing a 3-year deal. I mean, who knows what that means for the future of Aaron Cashin? As we well know, contracts don't really mean anything anymore. But what it does certainly do is that if a team wants to sniff around him again into the summer, Derby are going to be looking at that sort of 3-4 million pound price bracket again, aren't they? Which there was obviously offered in the summer and they turned it down.
Really good point, Jason. I think it's purely protecting the asset. I think exactly what Chris said. Aaron has been nothing short of excellent since the debacle of the summer window clearly affected him, and it would affect anybody. Yeah, this lad is in his early 20s, and I think he's handled himself extremely well. I'm not convinced he'll be here with us in the next 12 months, to be honest, unless we get him back on loan. I think that his value has only gone up, including the contract. And I think the 3 to 4 million would be a polite offer. Can he play in the Premier League? I'm not convinced yet. I think his pace is his Achilles heel, and that league is seriously quick. But he's got time on his hands to learn his game. John Terry was never the quickest player, but he became one of the best that's ever been. So great bit of business by Derby. I think it secures both the player's future and the club's future, and that we know that this one ain't going out the back door for a cheapie.
Which is music to Derby's ears. If we've managed to if we've shifted two youngsters in the last 12 months for a fee, then yeah, we're worlds apart from 2 years ago, aren't we? But Chris, I know you're not joining us for the Charlton chat. I appreciate you joining. I'm sorry I got delayed in recording this, but thanks for joining us, mate. And obviously, I'll see you on the next one.
All the best, guys. Cheers, Chris. Cheers, Jason.
So then, Chris, that is hopefully the last chat about transfers for obviously a few good months. And hopefully we're talking about transfers for building a championship squad in the summer. We'll wait to see what happens with that. But focus attention's back onto the pitch. As I said, something at the top of the show, we're only obviously 6 weeks into the new year, but it was the first time Derby recorded back-to-back victories this calendar year after what was a uninspiring January, I think it's fair to say, after what had been a pretty solid December. But important victories against, obviously, Cheltenham at home the other week wasn't fantastic, but we got the points. And then it was important to go to the Valley on Saturday and turn out a performance and try and get a result. And whilst, again, I don't think we were scintillating, I thought we did okay. I thought it was a typical away performance. We were backs to the walls at some time. They had quite a bit of the ball. Alfie May was making himself a bit of a nuisance. But all in all, I thought Derby pretty much, you know, handled them quite well. There was obviously that nervy moment where Sonny Bradley had that deflected shot, which went, luckily for Derby, the right side of the post. But all in all, not a game of loads and loads of chances. The keepers didn't have lots and lots and lots to do. But at the end of the day, Derby coming away from home, picking up 3 points, especially in the capital, is not something that we've been able to say as Derby fans for the last couple of years. So how pleased was you with certainly the points on Saturday and, you know, a half performance?
Yeah, I thought it was massive. So with all the, as we were saying earlier, with all the negativity and the noise around lack of the striker signing and Max kind of being loaned back and, yeah, all of that kind of stuff. And also sort of after a great December, as you rightly say, massively tried our best to throw it against Burton Albion. Massively uninspiring kind of performance against Cheltenham, but we got out of jail with a couple of worldies. So I think, yeah, to me, that, you know, it was a really encouraging kind of afternoon. It sort of, it's your classic promotion away game. You know, you can't play well and score 4, 3, 4 goals every week, just impossible. And good teams who get promoted go to places like Charlton and grind a 1-0, and that is what happened. Big away support, cracking atmosphere, everyone behind the team. And yeah, you know, kind of Ebu Adams, great debut, Sonny Bradley at last, you know, starting to look a bit like the player that we thought we'd signed. I just thought good, solid performances all through, you know, not amazing sort of, you know, spellbinding attacking football by any stretch of the imagination. But I think what it definitely was a rock solid, classic 1-0 away win. And I think back to all the promotions or promotion tilts I've seen Derby be involved in, and in fairness, they're the sort of games that get you top two. It was a really, really good day at the office.
Yeah, I think the point that you make, obviously the transfer window, things could have gone quite sour if Derby had have put in a turgid performance on Saturday. Definitely, I would agree. Just as we're talking, the Bolton Cambridge game is still rained off, but Peterborough has just taken the lead against Exeter. So I've flicked over to that. They've just scored a penalty, so we'll see. But yeah, absolutely. It could have gone very sour, and that then would have set Derby up again. A bit of a faltering, and then fans would have turned, oh, it's the February blip, it's this, it's that, it's the other. Hopefully, with, again, some, you know, you look at sort of the next, what, I think there's still another four, if not five games in February. Barnsley, obviously, away is the tasty one. But then you look at the others, a couple of home games in there, a trip to Exeter, isn't it, I think, next Tuesday, Shrewsbury at home. The other team at home eludes me at the moment, but the game,
Stevenage,
of course, which is a top, will be a top six battle. But you are going to hope and expect, and I suppose Derby will need to come out of February practically unbeaten. And with at least three or four wins, I would have thought, to boot, to keep that momentum going. And so after, as I say, a bit of a sluggish January, hopefully they've got that out of the system. And speaking of systems, that was a segue and a half. We saw the 3-5-2 implemented again on Saturday. And as I mentioned earlier on, I thought it looked a bit more comfortable with that sort of protector in the in that back line. Well, just in front of the back line, breaking up the play. It allowed the more advanced players to do their job. Now, I'm not saying that Derby dominated the game. Of course, they didn't. Charlton did have a fair amount of the ball. There's no two ways about that. But I think for everything that sort of Charlton did, Derby, as I say, throwing in the blocks, throwing in the tackles, bodies on the line, it was a typical away performance. And it was one of them. I think you can sort of look back at it. You'll look back at it with hindsight, but I think even as the game was going, those chances, like, as we weren't blistering going forward, the chances weren't really there, you know, being created, and it was just going to take a piece of magic. And you have to say the finish from Mendes Lang and the ball and the actual, you know, the progress play for getting Derby that goal, when, what, a couple of minutes previous, we thought Mendes Lang was probably coming off the pitch for him to get up and have a bit of a sprint and find that finish. Because that, to me, it was almost like the pass was a little bit behind him. It was a defence-splitting pass, but it looked a little bit behind him. But a cool finish, one that we know Mendes can do, and he has done many times in a Derby shirt. And then the professionalism in that second half, as I say, Charlton didn't necessarily bang on the door, but just that professionalism, it's defensive, it was pleasing. And as we say, it's another... And another way that Derby can play. It's a change of formation that looks a little bit more comfortable. We'll talk about, obviously, Joe, the couple of changes that came into the side that I think raised a few eyebrows in on that team sheet at 2 o'clock. But they all, pretty much to a man, did the job, Chris, on Saturday. And we've said it so many times before, if a team can turn up and put that sort of a 6.5 to 7 out of 10 performance in, you are going to beat most teams in this league, I would imagine.
Yeah, for sure, with the players we've got. I think what we saw on Saturday, which has been questioned a couple of times, and was there was just seemed to be a bit of a... There was just a bit of a togetherness, a desire. I would suggest there was a kind of a bond with the... You know, I think there's been... Again, a lot of talk all season about the kind of the, I can't think of the word, the sort of the, you know, the disjoin between the fans and the players sometimes. We've obviously seen that turn toxic on a few occasions, but, you know, certainly, you know, the fans fed off the players on Saturday, the players fed off the fans. I think Ebu Adams, again, having somebody there, you know, everyone loves a tackle, you know, kind of he ran, I think Warren even made a joke about it, you know, he ran around and, you know, smashed a few people, and then almost by osmosis, you know, Max Bird and Hooran started putting their foot in. And then, you know, again, fans love to see a player putting themselves about for the shirt. So, yeah, I think what you saw on Saturday was a real togetherness, a real desire not to lose that lead. And yeah, you know, the as I say, the this detachment that we've spoke about between the fans and the players, and we've definitely seen that in the atmosphere at home sometimes. You know, that wasn't there, you know, Saturday. And I think kind of from now to the end of the season, you know, that is the way it's got to be, you know, just 120% from the players, fans 120%, you know, regardless of your view of Warne, of tactics, of players. I think we're in the business end now. You know, we can go back to, you know, having a Bosch at 5-3-2 and 4-4-2 and Warne Ball and Stephen Pearce and all that stuff. You know, I think we've got to put that to one side now as a fan base. And from, you know, right here, right now to the end of April, whatever your views, just get behind the lads and let's get out this bloody crap league.
Yeah, no, I can't argue with that point. And I suppose it's almost vital now, like you say, that kind of camaraderie between the fans was evident on Saturday. It's just for me now, I think it's paramount that the next couple of home games aren't as turgid as Burton was, as Cheltenham was. If I mean, no disrespects, obviously they're going to be difficult games. Shrewsbury are no mugs, and obviously Stevenage are riding a crest at the moment, really, from where they came from last season. But it could be a game like the Stevenage one, and I think I say no disrespects. I think most would have expected them to have fell away by now, and they just haven't. So you've got to keep their name in the mix now for, you know, they are potential playoff contenders. Putting a statement out there and beating a team like that with a decent performance at Pride Park will just calm those nerves again, I think, from the home faithful. Because you're right, I think against Cheltenham, obviously, I wasn't at the Burton game. Unfortunately, I was away, but I was obviously there for the Cheltenham game. And again, the South Stand was a little bit subdued, a little bit quiet. I think it's time for him to put performance in, and I don't. It won't take much for me. I'd be interested in your thoughts, Chris. It won't take much for a couple of results, a couple of decent performances at Pride Park, and I think things again will change, and the fans will get back behind it. And you know, they're always, because of what we've seen at home over the course of the whole season, really, other than one or two sort of smattering performances. The football hasn't been brilliant at Pride Park. The results haven't necessarily been fantastic at Pride Park, and neither, you know, nothing about it has. So a couple of statement performances in sort of the next, what, 7, 8 days or whatever it'll be, that could really re-galvanise the fan base a little bit. Because we Derby aren't, you know, Derby fans aren't turning up to Pride Park to boo on purpose, but you know, they pay their hard-earned money. They deserve it. Is different. A home crowd is different to an away crowd. Of course it is. How important do you think it is over those next couple at home? If Derby can just put that sort of statement performance down at home, which I don't think we've seen all season, really, at Pride Park, that could again give the team that extra 5-10%, which, as we say, is definitely going to be needed between now and the running.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, if we could put Shrewsbury to the sword on Saturday, and yeah, as you say, get a bit of a statement win, you know, that is just going to, as I say, we've got to get everybody pulling in the right direction. There's no point arguing about, you know, Warne's not going anywhere, right? Until the, you know, at least until the summer. And, you know, Stephen Pearce isn't going anywhere. You know, we're not going to sign three players between now and the end of the season. So, all of that kind of, while it's all valid discussion and I get it, that was then, this is now. And I think that this disconnect with the fans, particularly at home, you know, we've got to bridge that. And the way you bridge that is by smashing somebody out of the park. And what we definitely can't have, by the way, is bloody Steve Evans fist pumping on the
Oof.
pitch
No.
into it. We can't, that just can't happen, right? So
No.
if we give Shrewsbury a doing on Saturday, and then put him to the sword in a couple of weeks, then I think you'll find that disconnect. And if we can stay in the top two as well, because if you're in the top two, psychologically, I've read a lot this week, sorry, heard a lot this week about, you know, for the players, psychologically getting in the top two is a thing. And I think it is for the fans as well. If we're in the top two, and we're in there batting, you know, I don't think anyone's going to care about the performance. If we beat Stevenage 2-0 and have two shots, no one's going to give a monkeys, right, at this point. And I think, yeah, as I say, it's a bit of a call to arms time now, really, for everybody to just sort of get behind the team, pull in the right direction, And we can get back to arguing about all the other stuff when we're hopefully in the championship.
Absolutely. I can't, in fact,
Oh.
I can't believe we've gone as far as we have in this podcast without mentioning we are in the top two, funnily enough, yes. Obviously we missed that opportunity against Reading a couple of weeks ago to go top. But yeah, there must be a psychological advantage to that. And again, it's something I've sort of mentioned, and other people on social media have mentioned. Obviously, I appreciate there is negativity as well, but it can't all be that bad if we are sat in second. We're talking about Bolton walking the league. We're talking about Portsmouth, see their little mini blip, sort of potentially changed after a positive result at the weekend. Peterborough, who 3 weeks ago were the best team Derby had come up against, we're ahead of two out of those three. I appreciate they've got a couple of games in hand, but at this moment in time, points on the board. And I don't think there's any Derby fan that would say that we've had a blistering season. We are sat second. We are right in and amongst it, and it's almost a bit odd to believe, actually. With the caveat comes if Derby had just turned up on one or two more occasions, we'd be blowing this league apart, which is I understand, but we can't, because that's it. That's hindsight. But all can't be that bad if we are sat second with what 16 games to go. And as you say, I think now it is the time to try, and if fans can, I appreciate not all will, but can drop the negativity side of things and just get right behind them, because turning up and booing them's not, I understand it, but again, it's probably not really going to help them at the moment. They want to be this hoodoo of the January, February sort of slide that Derby tend to go on. If we can banish that this season, with a solid February, then really, I suppose the war, it would take something monumental for Derby to certainly not make the top six. And you never know, as I say, with another five games really to go in February, we could be looking, beginning of March time, when obviously you've got what, end of March, beginning of April, you've got Bolton on the horizon, you've got Portsmouth on the horizon. I think it's Portsmouth Easter Monday, is it, away? Yes,
Yeah,
yeah.
1st of April, yeah.
Blackpool on the Friday, haven't we? And then that's going to be a key time for Derby. But with teams, they are starting to drop points up there. Teams, not everybody's getting it their own way. So if Derby can go about the business, then I think that's a positive. But yeah, I think if we could somehow get a bit of a statement February out in, then I think the world would be a much better place as a Derby fan, personally. Final point on the podcast, as I say, just alluding it back to Charlton and talking. Obviously, Sonny Bradley came in. Don't think he really put a foot wrong. Joe Ward comes out of the wilderness, Chris. As I say, there was a couple of names on the team sheet that were a bit of a surprise. We kind of. At right back, Joe Ward probably wasn't the first name that everybody would have expected to have started. Appreciate why Nyambe probably didn't, because obviously his AFCON exploits and the travelling. But if they have sort of been looking at that 3-5-2, I mean, first of all, Joe Ward I thought looked quite decent after we've seen a couple of really shaky performances for him for Derby. His last couple, so it was reassuring to see that. And then the Ryan Nyambe thing, as I mentioned earlier, you can only assume it'd be madness for him to not come straight back into the team. But he's obviously not a right wing back. Are we expecting him to see him more central in a three, and then who's going to miss out? Or is it going to be more of a four? Or is it, as we mentioned earlier, so it's a three-pronged question, really. Does this aid that fluidity that we've got, where we can swap and change dependent on who we play? If a Barnsley away, we might have to go that little bit more defensive. Stevenage at home might have to go a little bit more defensive. But teams that we think we can dispatch, do we go for it and just share the minutes out a little bit? Which again, come the end of come that running, if not everybody's played the last 20 games, whilst for team fluidity, I understand it. But actually, having and when did we last say Derby might have a fresher squad at the back end of a season? That again, that could be that ultimate point that helps them out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, these are all nice problems to have, aren't they? In fairness, you know, I mean, kind of
For a
going
change,
back,
yeah.
yeah, I mean, going back a few months, I mean, we were struggling to fill the bench, weren't we? You know, with first team players, but yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's horses for courses, really. I don't think Nyambi, by his own admission, probably wants to play wing back. So if you're playing a five, he's an option in the centre. I think Joe Ward. It was good to see him back in the game because he was strongly rumoured to be leaving, wasn't he, on deadline day on loan somewhere. So good to see him in back to something resembling the player he was earlier in the season because, yeah, he's been brutal. And, you know, Kane, obviously, he could play right wing back or even if Mendes is out, he can, you know, play a bit further up with, you know, maybe Blackett Taylor on the other wing. So, yeah, these are all nice problems to have. And I think you're right. I think, you know, Warne will just call it as he sees it, you know, horses for courses. He has got a bad habit of paying too much respect to some of these opposition teams to come up against. But yeah, I think you're right. You know, you Barnsley away, you might look at, you know, if some we're coming up where somebody's got a particularly tricky right left winger or whatever, you know, Nyambi's obviously your man to deal with that. Whereas Shrewsbury at home on Saturday, I'd be reasonably confident you're going to see Joe Ward or Kane Wilson charging down the right wing, or both of them, perhaps, charging down the right wing, and let's just get up and take them apart. So yeah, these are all good problems to have, mate. And yeah, I think, you know, I think you'll see all three of them featuring pretty regularly through to the end of the season.
No, I would fully agree, and hopefully the last comment is, say Shrewsbury Saturday at Pride Park. I'm hoping, obviously, we think back to the game at Pride Park last season, which we had a pretty solid 45, and then the world fell out of its arse in the second half, didn't it? So hopefully we won't have that, and obviously that little bit of revenge from earlier on in the season where Derby just did not turn up, did they, on that Saturday there? We got absolutely bullied and battered. So we've got a wrong to right, I think, on Saturday, haven't we?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I mean they've been poor all season, you know, and you know, yeah, I mean that was definitely, well, the next two home games are the two, aren't they? Sort of Shrewsbury and Stevenage, they were the two kind of dark days. I mean, I didn't go to Shrewsbury, but I went to Stevenage, and that, yeah, I can't think of many more nastier afternoons. Certainly the last 20 minutes of that were not pleasant, and in the away end. So yeah, a couple of wrongs to right there, 100%. And yeah, you know, no reason why not, mate. Onwards and upwards. And you know, let's give them a doing on Saturday, and you know, hopefully that's a springboard for the rest of Feb.
Absolutely. And just to say, Stevenage have just conceded at home to Reading. So,
Great.
yeah, so there we go. So far, not a mixed bag tonight. But, Chris, that's all for the podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, mate. It's an absolute pleasure as always, and we'll catch you next time.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for inviting me on, Jace.
No problem at all, mate. And as always, until next time, up the Rams. Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Rams Review podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to get in touch, we're on Twitter at RamsReview1. Our Facebook is Rams Review Podcast, or you can drop us an email, ramsreview@hotmail.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, up the Rams.